Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. When Donald Trump ran for president, he promised to end the Obama administration's war on coal, as he called it, and to save jobs in the coal industry in states like Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Kentucky. The Obama administration's Clean Power Plan would have given states targets for reducing carbon emissions, mostly from coal-burning power plants. Pennsylvania's target was a 33% reduction by the year 2030. But yesterday, the Trump administration announced it was scrapping the Clean Power Plan and replacing it with what they call the Affordable Clean Energy Rule. States would have more authority over how to control gas emissions. Let's listen to what the president had to say at a rally last night in West Virginia.
We're canceling Obama's illegal anti-coal destroying regulations, the so-called Clean Power Plan. Doesn't that sound nice? Clean power. You know, when I ended the Paris Accord, what's a more beautiful name than the Paris Accord? Let's call it the West Virginia Accord. Maybe I would have signed. But when I entered it, that was going to cost us hundreds of billions of dollars. Hundreds of billions. And other countries, as an example, China, didn't kick in until many years in the future. We kicked in immediately. Russia went back many years, which was not a clean time in terms of the environment. Because you know what? We all agree. We want a clean environment. We want a strong, beautiful, clean environment. I want clean air. I want crystal clean water. And we've got it. We've got the cleanest country in the planet right now. There's nobody cleaner than us. And it's getting better and better. But I'm getting rid of some of these ridiculous rules and regulations which are killing our companies, our states, and our jobs.
President Trump at a rally in West Virginia last night to discuss the new Affordable Clean Energy Rule and scrapping the Clean Power Plan. On today's program is Rob Altenberg, director of the environmental group Penn Futures Energy Center. Rob Altenberg, welcome back to the program.
Great to be here, Scott.
Also joining us is Christina Simeone, Director of Policy External Affairs at the University of Pennsylvania's Kleinman Center for Energy Policy. Ms. Simeone, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532, or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Rob Altenberg, let me ask you first, your reaction to the Trump administration's plan to scrap the Clean Power Plan and to enact its own.
Well, the Clean Power Plan itself was a very modest step forward in reducing carbon pollution in the United States and in Pennsylvania. This plan is going to end up costing more and doing less and causing a lot more pain and suffering, with up to or more than 1,400 additional lives lost because of pollution, excess pollution as a result, a direct result of this plan.
How do you measure that?
What the EPA didn't, from the EPA's own analysis for their own plan, they looked at the excess amount of particulate emissions that are going to be coming into the atmosphere because of this. We have a long track record of looking what happens in hospital emergency rooms and what happens with public health when particulate emissions spike. And there's a very clear correlation that increased particulate emissions lead to excess deaths.
But the Trump administration said, and I don't know whether the president said this last night at his rally, but EPA said that there would be less pollution. There would actually be less carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
Well, what they said is this plan would have less carbon dioxide than doing nothing. It would not have less carbon dioxide than adopting the Clean Power Plan as we're already on the pathway to do. So they said in their plan, they say there's $3.4 billion in net benefits that they claim from their plan, mostly public health benefits. And they're out there saying, well, billions of dollars in benefits. But what they're not saying is the Clean Power Plan they were replacing had up to $45 billion in net benefits. So we are actually losing a lot of ground by scrapping the Clean Power Plan and going with this plan.
We'll talk some more specifics in just a moment. Christina Simeone, your take on what the administration did yesterday.
Hi there. Well, thanks again for having me on the air, Scott, today. So the good news is that basically this is a pretty modest proposal in the sense that this is not going to increase coal use or carbon emissions significantly. The administration is not proposing to rescind the endangerment finding, which was the regulatory document that basically said, hey, under the Clean Air Act, EPA, you need to regulate greenhouse gas emissions because they are harmful to public health and the environment. The other good piece of kind of information here is that emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, are going to continue to be reduced given the current trajectory of what's happening in the power sector. All things being equal, there are some concerns about nuclear plants starting to retire that will could increase greenhouse gas emissions. The other good news is that this is going to be drawn out legally for a long time. So it's unclear whether this is, or I think it's fair to say that this is not where the conversation stops.
Can I interrupt for just one moment?
Sure.
Something that you just said, and I wanted to point out, is that you said it would be drawn out legally for a long time. The Clean Power Plan actually never went into effect because it went into court. You know, a combination of coal companies, labor unions, and some states, 27 states, mm-hmm. that filed suit against it. So it never actually went into effect right now. With that said, you were about to turn to what you see as the bad news with this plan.
Yes, thank you. And that's absolutely right. So the bad news is we should be doing a lot more. This is probably the this administration proposed the least possible activity or the least possible regulatory activity that they could justify, given the fact that they are required to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. It's upsetting because there's also a trend of rejecting science, and that, you know, if we don't do more to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and put a price on carbon, we are going to start to see increased emissions as some of the zero carbon resources go offline. And as Rob mentioned, there are projected to be additional premature deaths from coal pollution. And I also think that it's, you know, this rule doesn't do anything to structurally change the challenges facing the coal industry. And rather than giving miners and coal communities false hopes that the future is going to change drastically, we should be doing probably more to help those communities and those miners find a more kind of sustainable future and, you know, better jobs that are going to be around for a long time.
On that point, I didn't listen to the president's entire speech last night in West Virginia, but focused on the parts having to do with the Clean Power Plan. One of the things that he did say is that during the 2016 campaign, that when he would sit down with coal miners and those who had worked in the mines for years in West Virginia and other states, is they said, okay, he said, what we have in mind is retraining, that we're going to get other jobs for you, you know, find some, you know, the retraining was the big part. And the coal miners said to him, I'm quoting the president, that we don't want those other jobs. We want to work in the mines. So, Rob, that, you know, he's saying that, and of course, he got a big cheer in West Virginia, that they want to continue. And we have seen statistics that say that a lot, they're not getting as many coal miners or former coal miners in job training programs as had been anticipated. I mean, the question there is, are the people that Christina was talking about, the coal miners, the people in these coal mining towns and cities, are they just not seeing the reality?
Well, I had a chance to go to Southern West Virginia last year, and what you see there is a community where really the only jobs in the community are tied to these mines. If they you know, in the view of a lot of the people there, leaving the mining or leaving coal-related jobs means moving out of town, leaving their families, leaving the lifestyle that they're used to. So it is a serious issue. There is some desperate poverty in parts of the West Virginia particularly that there is no easy answer to address. But the economics of the situation are coal is declining and coal will continue to decline. And even the chairman of First Energy had said a couple years ago, even without the Clean Power Plan, they would still be retiring their coal plants. They simply can't compete in the market today.
And that's with natural gas. And let me ask this question. Is it accurate to say that even if coal was not a pollutant, environmental reasons aside, health reasons aside, that coal would be suffering right now because of natural gas? Simple economics.
Well, absolutely. And we're not seeing in the past few years, we're not seeing increased requirements being put on these coal plants because of the delay of the Clean Power Plant and other things. Yet we're still seeing coal power plants retiring. We're seeing the Brunner Island plant just south of us here converting to natural gas, and it's in a process. By 2023, it'll be a natural gas plant. Nobody is investing in new coal. Nobody's building new plants in this area. And the plants that we have, our youngest large coal plant in Pennsylvania is 38 years old, and most of them are in their late 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, we're going to be taking some phone calls and emails in just a moment. I wanted to also mention we invited the Coal Alliance of Pennsylvania and PPL to appear on the program, but they declined our invitation. Christina Simeone, one of the big selling points, if you will, if I want to describe it that way, for this new role is that it would let the states decide what they wanted to do with emissions. A lot of people like that idea, at least on the surface, because let the states decide what's happening in their own areas rather than big government, the federal government, deciding. What about that? Good or bad thing?
Well, I think both the Clean Power Plan and the Affordable Clean Energy Rule both gave a lot of flexibility to the states to decide. You know, the federal government kind of put in its kind of portfolio of activities or measures, emission reduction measures or strategies that they would allow, and then would let the states tailor the response. I think the concern here, you know, with this proposal, one of the several concerns is that there really is no there's no sense of what the total reductions will be. There's no kind of emissions standard that the states all, like a floor that the states have to achieve, because there are, for these kind of efficiency improvements at coal plants, the ability to achieve or improve efficiency is going to be very much on a plant-by-plant basis. So EPA has said, you know, their estimated reductions are just that, are very rough estimates, and may fall short or may exceed what they expect. So I think it just boils down to the point of we really don't know how meaningful these reductions will be. And I just wanted to circle back to a point that Rob made about new coal plant construction. And, you know, what I had mentioned about the structural challenges facing the industry. The Mid-Atlantic Power Grid, operated by PJM Interconnection, they have a list of power plants that are proposed to be coming into the power system, so new power plants that are proposed to be built. Many of these new power plants won't actually ever be constructed, but there's things that the grid operator is studying. 50% of all the new plants that are on that queue or that list are combined cycle gas plants, high efficiency gas plants. 23% are solar and 22% are wind. So what, in competitive markets, what is being built? 95% of what's being built are high efficiency gas, solar, and wind, and that's driven purely by economics. As far as coal, we see less than 0.1% of coal plants being proposed, and that's mostly, uprates at existing plants. So that is driven purely by economics, not necessarily by a regulatory regime.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about the Trump administration's scrapping yesterday of the Clean Power Plan and coming up with what they call the Affordable Clean Energy Rule, how it makes some changes and has to do a lot with coal-burning power plants. Our guest today, Christina Simeone, Director of Policy External Affairs at the University of Pennsylvania's Kleinman Center for Energy Policy, Rob Altenberg, Director of the environmental group Penn Futures Energy Center. And I also want to mention that we invited the Coalliance of Pennsylvania and PPL to appear in the program, but they both declined. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's take some calls. Shar is in Enola. Shar, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, you're welcome.
Rolling back the Clean Power Plan is a blatant disregard of the health and welfare of humanity that is facing the mounting and daily effects of climate change. We see that every day. Climate change is the one issue where science, technology, economics, health collide with politics. I see it as the only path to address climate change is to demand leadership on all levels of government, leadership that acts not in the interest of a few fossil fuel professionals and a dying industry, but rather leadership that acts as if the future mattered.
Shar,
thank you.
But you know, the reality, Shar, is that it is a political issue when there are many people said it shouldn't be a political issue, that the science has been settled. Shar, thank you very much for your call. And Christina, you had mentioned this earlier about the administration in a lot of instances not taking science seriously. That sound clip I had with President Trump from West Virginia last night, he said that he wanted clean water and clean air. But I also noticed that he did not mention climate change, and there are a lot of people in the administration that reject the science of climate change. Should this be a political issue?
You know, in a perfect world, it shouldn't. But the reality is that there are, you know, we have an economy that has been built on a certain way of doing things. There are communities, businesses that are all used to kind of the traditional way of operating. And then we have this new scientific, theory that is, later proven more and more often to be factual. And now, the vast majority of the scientific community agree, and in fact, the rest of the world agrees that it's that this is a problem that we have to face. And the United States is the only country not recognizing that this is a global problem. I think it's the intersection of economics, science, and policy. There's legacy industries that will be, and legacy and communities built on those legacy industries that will be harmed through this transition, and that creates a lot of tension. The reality, though, with this administration, beyond the climate rules, is that the deregulatory agenda which they are pursuing is based more, I think, on politics than science, and that has been bearing out in the courts, where many of the rules that the EPA has tried to either rescind or change through its deregulatory agenda have been losing in court battles. The waters of the U.S., pesticides, chemical safety rules, issues related to the Keystone Pipeline, et cetera, et cetera. So I think many of these changes are driven more by politics and economics than science.
Rob Altenberg, let's follow up on that a little bit. Christina is absolutely accurate when she says that the Trump administration has made it a priority to roll back many of the regulations that the Obama administration put in place. And it's hard to look at that and think it's not politically motivated in some cases. But the president said that the Clean Power Plan was a job killer. What do you think about that?
Actually, the Clean Power Plan was projected to increase the number of jobs. There was a report by a group of environmental entrepreneurs that came out today that talked about additional jobs expecting from implementing strong pollution controls. You know, what we're seeing now is as coal is replaced by natural gas, we're seeing job loss at these plants. But if we had a plan out there that encouraged reinvestment, increase in pollution controls from these plants, or new and novel approaches to reducing carbon pollution, all of that creates jobs for the U.S. This plan, which essentially does nothing, this plan certainly it does defer to the state what standards these plants have to meet. But that, even then, under this new plan, a state could take 6 years with doing absolutely nothing before any sort of penalty would apply. So they've slowed this down. This is a do-nothing plan to a large extent. And that isn't going to do anything but let this job loss as coal retirements happen accelerate. So this really does nothing for jobs.
Politically, there are many people who like to see the states have more authority. But one thing that you do get in a situation like this is you have a global problem. And you have 50 states just in this country. And politically, you may have governors, legislatures that weigh those economics against the science and decide they want to go with the economics. So even though, again, philosophically, politically, there may be a lot of people out there saying, you know, I like the states having more authority here. In this case, we're talking about a worldwide issue.
Well, certainly. Now, in some cases, having state authority to act makes sense. The Trump administration is, at the same time we're seeing this, they're also proposing to repeal the vehicle emission standards. And one of the things they're proposing to repeal is the California waiver. That's a special part of the Clean Air Act that lets California enact more stringent emission standards and lets Pennsylvania and other states opt into it. We've done that. The Trump administration is proposing to take that ability away, to say, no, on the federal level, we're going to make all those decisions for you. And then on this plan, they are saying, no, we want to make no decisions at the federal level and force all the decisions down to the state. Now, there are decisions that are more appropriate in federal and more appropriate in the state. When you're talking about air pollution, transport is a big issue. You know, we have a situation right now where Pennsylvania plants are subject to more stringent standards than Ohio plants because of a quirk in the law. Having a situation where a individual state has to compete with its neighbors creates a race to the bottom, which doesn't serve anybody. Having strong federal standards that create a floor lets everybody do the right thing without being undercut by somebody that wants to cut corners.
Let's take some more phone calls. Myrna is in Upper Allen Township. Myrna, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, you're welcome.
My question is, are Pennsylvania's current emission standards adequate to prevent air and water pollution and climate change caused by fossil fuels? And what would happen if those standards are loosened?
All right. Thank you very much for your call. Robbie, you want to handle this? By the way, both our guests are formerly with the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, so you're very familiar with what happens here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, well, certainly, especially with these plants in particular, the standards are not going far enough. There's just a report from the U.S. Academy of Sciences that says, you know, this 2-degree warming that we're trying to keep under to prevent the worst aspects of global warming, that's probably not enough. I mean, we have to do more, and this plan does very little, and it certainly does less than the Clean Power Plan.
But the point she makes, and you also made, is that Pennsylvania does have higher standards now than some other states.
For certain pollutants. For carbon pollution, there's no specific state standard for carbon pollution. We do have certain requirements for ozone-causing pollution and the smog-forming pollution.
Mm-hmm. Christina, I want to have you weigh in on this conversation, too. As I mentioned, you also were with DEP here in Pennsylvania. What about that aspect of the states having more authority?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting because the Trump administration kind of has taken a bit of a kind of bifurcated strategy with respect to states' rights. On this ACE rule, they're saying, okay, well, we defer to the states. on, you know, their choice of standards. Yet at the federal level, the administration and the Department of Energy have been trying a variety of ways to provide subsidies to certain coal and nuclear plants in the guise of these plants have a certain supply of fuel on site, and you know, we need to keep these plants open for national security purposes. So on the one side, they're saying, no, the states need to choose. And on the other side, they're saying, no, you know, we as a federal government, we want to choose what resources, and these are our preferred resources. You know, from a climate perspective, you know, keeping the nuclear plants online, you know, is aligned with a low-carbon future. The coal plants, I'm not sure. And the idea that, you know, having fuel on site is a national security priority really flies in the face of some of the things that the power sector really needs to be focusing on, which is, you know, in addition from, you know, low carbon, you know, moving to a zero carbon or lower carbon fuel mix or power mix, we have a great amount of work to be done on cyber and physical security. You know, there's always a focus on reliability. And then extreme weather, especially hardening the distribution system to deal with extreme weather. I think the Public Utility Commission of Pennsylvania recently issued a report saying that, you know, extreme weather is kind of going to be the norm in Pennsylvania. And I think in the PPL territory where most of your listeners are, in 2017, they had 26 significant power outages, all which were caused by extreme weather. The average is about 14 per year. And that extreme weather is something that, you know, is consistent with what scientists have predicted with climate change.
But let me follow up on that, though. There are, and if I hope I have my figures correct here, 20 coal-burning power plants in Pennsylvania that are supplying 30% of the state's energy right now. That's almost one-third of the state's energy. So when you're talking about reliability and you're talking about one-third of the energy, there would be those who would say that you take that one-third away and it is going to be a little less reliable, more than a little.
Well, I think, you know, what we're seeing in Pennsylvania is there are so many new gas plants that are coming in. If those coal plants were to close, there would be new gas plants immediately coming online. The high-efficiency gas plants are relatively inexpensive to build and inexpensive to or easier to site than a coal plant. And also, the regional grid operator has about a little over a 25-26% reserve margin, so that means excess supply that they can use for reliability purposes. So I don't think anybody has I wouldn't have any concerns about reliability. There are some questions about, you know, as we move to a more gas-focused or gas-dependent system, what are the, what are the kind of vulnerabilities of that system, because gas plants receive fuel supply from the pipeline just, you know, as they're using it rather than stockpiling fuel on site. They may keep some oil in backup if they need to use that. So there's a lot of questions about what that means, and the grid operator is looking at that, federal regulators are looking at that and trying to take it, you know, a technical approach to ensure that you know, that fuel security is not an issue. With respect to reliability, I don't think there's a concern.
Yeah, particularly in Pennsylvania, because you say 30% of our generation about is from coal, but we export 30% of our generation out of state. Our grid is big. It goes from Chicago to North Carolina. We have a lot of excess power that we're sending elsewhere on the grid. And if there is a specific situation where a particular plant is needed for reliability, we already have a process through the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission where that plant could get what's known as reliability must run status and keeps running until sufficient grid upgrades or other upgrades come online that would allow it to retire.
Something that just popped into my head, it's a separate story, but yet it's related. This morning, NPR was reporting about the Trump administration's tariffs. And one of the biggest importers of coal is China. And that China would respond to tariffs from the Trump administration with a tariff on coal. And I'm asking you this out of the blue. I have no idea whether you can answer this question or not. But again, that would seem to be a real negative toward the coal industry.
It certainly is. We're seeing, exports, particularly of metallurgical coal, the particular type of coal that we're seeing actually some growth in exporting. And China is a huge market for that. Those tariffs have a potential to end that market. But what we see and what we see in a lot of these tariffs is there'll be a tariff and then there'll be a separate subsidy that will limit the effect of that tariff for whatever favored group is happening. So it's becoming a very complicated mess with the tariff problem.
But Christina, this has been one of the arguments from those who have tried to slow down what the U.S. has done when it comes to fighting climate change or making changes in our energy grid and the energy that we have, is that until China does, and China, the world's largest polluter, that until China does, we're not going to do it because it puts us at an economic disadvantage. Now, I may be raising something that was argued back during the Bush years. But what about that? Has China made any changes? I mean, it sounds like, as we said, the biggest importer of coal, that they're still importing one of the dirtiest energy producers out there.
Yeah, I mean, China's demand for energy is growing quite fast, whereas in the United States, our energy demand is relatively flat. I think, the important thing to remember is that as a developed country here in the United States, we have been, our energy use has already, the trajectory has already kind of, we've gone up in that exponential growth phase, and we're now at a kind of flat plateau phase. China's just, in that exponential growth stage. So there's a question, about, how much should the United States kind of commit to up front because of the emissions that we created in the past? And if this is a global problem, shouldn't that be part of the equity conversation? Now, that is a question about kind of what's moral and what's fair, but it is very difficult to have those conversations when you have real economic competition happening. And no one wants to say, I'm going to do more because I had more emissions in the past, when we're operating in the here and now, and China's getting this advantage because we have to reduce emissions and they're not. But again, the reality with China is, even though they're importing a lot of coal, they're also making real commitments to greenhouse gas reductions and pollutant reductions, renewable energy, enormous subsidies for manufacturing of renewable energy technologies, and they see, because they don't have the same kind of legacy industries developed in the energy sector, they see an opportunity to almost leapfrog us on a lot of these technology innovations. So I suspect that's probably where it'll go. They will invest in coal, yes, but they will invest in nuclear, they will invest in renewables, electric vehicles, and manufacturing, and that will help their economy grow.
Rob, all you got to do is look at those photographs of Beijing and look at the air, and you see people walking around the streets with masks on their face. Maybe that's their motivation for trying to clean up their air.
Yeah, I mean, certainly you see this poor economies, as they raise their standard of living, they increase emissions. And then it gets to a point where they continue to raise their standard of living but decrease their emissions. It's a pattern we've seen all around the world. But one of the important things I think we miss in this conversation in saying that, we have to do things but China doesn't. When China or India or these other countries are doing things to lower their emissions, that's an opportunity for the U.S. to sell technology and to provide services to help them. That could be jobs in the U.S. helping these countries meet these standards. And this is what other countries are doing. They're taking climate change seriously, they're developing the technologies, and they're helping other countries. They're selling this technology to other countries.
We're going to take more phone calls and emails in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're discussing the Trump administration's affordable clean energy rule today, what it means for the country, what it means for Pennsylvania. Our guest today, Rob Altenberg, director of the environmental group Penn Futures Energy Center, and Christina Simeone, director of policy external affairs at the University of Pennsylvania's Kleinman Center for Energy Policy. We invited the Co-Alliance of PA and PPL to appear on the program, but they did decline. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's take some more phone calls. Ed is in Bowlesburg. Ed, you're on the air.
Hi. One of the things you mentioned, and Christina, was about how these lawsuits are going to delay Trump's efforts to roll back the Clean Power Plan. And I would say in this instance, unfortunately, I know what you were saying, but really delay is not our friend here, because as the climate, one of the things the climate scientists have not been good at doing is predicting the speed at which bad things are happening to us. And we only have to look at these incredibly extreme weather events all around our country to know that unless we get on the stick and get going in reducing fossil fuel use, that our country is headed for routine calamities every year. One of the things I'd like to, them to talk about is compare the jobs in the renewable energy industry to the jobs that are in the fossil fuel industry.
All right.
Thanks for taking
that. Hey, Ed, thank you very much. He brings up a couple of real good points, Rob, talking about that this is an emergency when you talk about the climate change, but he also wants to ask the question about jobs. Let's start with the speed.
Well, yeah, and there had the difficulty with this plan, and yes, I expect this is going to have, there's going to be lawsuits, and this is going to delay the implementation of the plan. And there is some reason to say, well, hey, we're getting some, if we get any emission reductions at all, don't we want to get that immediately and not delay it? Unfortunately, this plan may be, implementing this plan may be worse than doing nothing. There's particular elements in this plan. One of them is rolling back the standards on new service review for power plants that could be very dangerous, not only for carbon pollution, but have effects for pollution from a number of pollution sources. So it could be very dangerous to implement this plan directly the way it's written. As for jobs, I think the caller is right. The clean energy industry, whether it's solar or wind, does produce many more jobs for an equivalent megawatt of power than coal-fired power plants. Our biggest growth sectors in the U.S. right now for jobs are wind technicians and solar installers. So we do see that growth, and we'll see that growth more and more as solar accelerates. We've got a lot of potential for growth there.
Christina, you had touched on the percentages a little bit earlier. But you know, there may be some people who would say, okay, we hear those figures about the jobs in solar, in wind, but we aren't seeing more. The percentages that is created by power from solar and from wind still very small here in Pennsylvania, at least.
Mm-hmm. Well, first, I would say, you know, I personally have a lot of skepticism. Anytime anybody gives a study about how many jobs are going to be created with a policy, because there's a lot of smoke and mirrors with these studies on both sides of the argument. The way I look at it as, you know, with fossil fuels and you know, the coal industry, you have jobs in the fuel supply chain, and then you have jobs with a specific central generator, large-scale central generator. With renewable energies and these new technologies, you have more distributed generators, and then instead of a fuel supply chain, you have technology manufacturing and installation and all that associated with the installation of all of these kind of smaller systems. And there's a lot of assumptions you can make about what's more on net. But what I would say is, in general, states that are really seeing the job growth are ones that have led on policy to try to kind of attract jobs, attract businesses to their states through growth-based policies, whether that be market mandates or subsidies or tax credits, et cetera. Pennsylvania at one point was a leader on policy for these new technologies, but that's no longer the case. And that could be responsible for why Pennsylvania is not kind of seeing as much growth, as much job growth as some other states have.
Let's take a call along these lines from Greg in Millersville. Greg, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I'm this is a follow-up, I believe, for the last gentleman, Ed, but I believe so the solar industry is the second fastest growing industry in Pennsylvania right now. And yet I, as a homeowner in a homeowners association here in Millersville in the Crossgates community, on two different occasions, I was turned down for solar panels. And it's primarily because Pennsylvania is not one of the 27 states of the union that has laws that protect homeowners in homeowners associations to prevent the homeowners association to prevent them from saying you can't have solar panels. And I was, there are communities in Florida, Georgia, across the South, that homeowners associations are selling homes, and they already come equipped with solar panels. If I move to New Jersey, Delaware, or Maryland, a homeowners association could not tell me that I can't have solar panels. So I find that most of these environmental issues are coming locally from the state government, and I find that Pennsylvania is a little bit behind, and I'd like to have the two panelists discuss that.
Thank you very much for your call.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a lot of that Pennsylvania can do to make solar more accessible. The state right now, the State Department of Environmental Protection, is in the middle of a study called Funding Pennsylvania Solar Future, where they have just produced a report on just these sorts of issues. So it is, you know, it is something that people are definitely aware of and they're working on the state level. And people do recognize the value of solar and clean energy.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. What were you going to say, Christina?
Well, I was just going to say, I think with respect to Pennsylvania and renewable energy policy, I think Pennsylvania is one of the more complicated states with respect to energy resources and energy policy. I mean, Pennsylvania has a little bit of everything. Coal, nuclear, renewable energy, hydropower, and we're a national leader on natural gas production. So, and we're operating in an environment where, again, at least in the power sector, energy use is relatively, or energy demand is relatively stagnant. So, because there's not a lot of growth and we have so many energy resources, it's a little bit of a food fight, and so it makes kind of anything related to energy policy extremely complicated and also very important.
Let's go to Claudia in Paradise in Lancaster County. Claudia, you're on the air.
Yes, I think we're all kind of working on the same page here, and that is our own state legislature. If national energy policy is going to devolve to the states, where are we at with our state legislature? Who in Harrisburg is ready to work for mitigating climate change? I don't see anything happening. And, you know, the jobs thing is brought up. I bring up the jobs thing when I talk to my state legislature, legislator. It seems to fall on deaf ears. I just wonder if other people know somebody at the legislature that we could kind of partner with, because I'm not getting anything out of my legislator.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. Let me follow up with an email along similar lines from Laura in Lewisburg, who says, does Pennsylvania have a real energy plan? At best, the planning around our resources seems like mega gambling and haphazard harvests. When I see our northern tier gigantic wind turbines sitting dormant right now after expensive timbering, road production, soot installation, and local disturbance, it makes one wonder. and she's Lewisburg at Bucknell University, we have local-based, responsible, sustaining planning in place for power production. The state seems disorganized with no real vision at this time. Am I missing something? Rob?
Well, I think the caller is right, and I think Christina really had a point there, that we have so many energy resources in the state that there's a lot of tension, particularly in the legislature, between we have a coal caucus, a gas caucus, a nuclear caucus, and even a clean energy caucus, that are all active in the state legislature. So it's very difficult to come up with a comprehensive plan that satisfies all these diverse parties.
But isn't it that the job of the legislature, though?
Well, certainly, certainly we're seeing work done on this. We're seeing work out of the Department of Environmental Protection in their climate planning. We're seeing more work being done analyzing energy issues. Translating that work that's being done at the administrative level into education and coordinated policy in the state is something that we just have not effectively done yet.
And Scott, I would just add to that, yes, Pennsylvania does not have a coordinated energy plan or policy, but neither does the federal government. The United States doesn't have a coordinated energy strategy either. And a lot of what goes on is deferred to the states or to the markets and to the private sector, and it just ends up being a bit of a food fight rather than a coordinated strategy. And I think that leaves a lot of opportunity for regulatory uncertainty and investment uncertainty, stranded assets, inefficiently deployed capital, and a host of other issues that if we were more coordinated, we could avoid.
One of the things that can appreciate about this conversation today is that we started talking about the Clean Power Plan and the new ACE plan, the Affordable Clean Energy Rule, but we've talked about the audience has called in, and we've talked about a wide range of topics having to do with energy policy, having to do with climate change. Here's another one. Linda in Hummelstown says, she wanted to comment on the loss of woods, forest, and trees associated with siting gas pipelines. This impact also has to be considered as it impacts air quality as well. You know, we were talking off the air, Rob, during one of our breaks about these topics are so interrelated. But the point that Linda brings up, what about that?
Certainly with gas pipelines, I think forest fragmentation is a big issue. There's impact on species. It is an important issue that we have to find a way of addressing. Pennsylvania is one of the few states that's pipeline constrained in the ability to we have gas that we have the inability to get to power plants. That creates an electric reliability issue in the polar vortex, where we a couple years ago where electric prices spiked. The big forced outage cause was gas plants not having the ability to get gas. There are reliability issues. There are land use issues. There's a lot of very complicated things that have to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. We only have about 2 minutes left, and I want to thank both of you for being with us today. In 90 seconds, we can't do this justice, but I want to ask the question anyway. In fact, it could be a program all on its own. I think you touched on this, Rob, but one of the things that has been rolled back by the Trump administration, I don't know if it's officially been rolled back, but they are considering it, is that the Obama administration wanted minimum mileage for automobiles to be increased. And that is something the Trump administration is considering, or maybe they already have. They talked about it a little bit last week. You mentioned California. California is fighting this because they had their own. But, we were talking 50 miles per gallon by a certain year that would be a goal for automobiles to reach. Rob, about a minute. Where are we with this?
Well, yeah, the Trump administration is still trying to block the California waiver and the ability to increase mileage standards. Other countries are already meeting these standards or are on track to meet even higher standards than we're scheduled to meet. But Pennsylvania opted into the California program. We're using that to get cleaner air for our citizens. And if this is successful, where the California's waiver is blocked, then we have to have the same emission controls that Alaska has. It gives us no choice to protect our citizens from the leading cause of carbon pollution in the United States right now, transportation emissions.
Christina, we only have about 15 seconds. Would you like to add to that?
Just that, again, transportation sector is now number one source of greenhouse gas emissions. Power sector is number two. I would hope that the United States auto manufacturers continue to look at where the rest of the world is moving towards electric vehicles, towards higher efficiency vehicles, and see that as part of their competitive future rather than a temporary rule rollback that will only put them behind the curve as far as being a sustainable and competitive industry.
Rob Altenberg with Penn Future, Christina Simeone with the University of Pennsylvania's Climate Center for Energy Policy. Thank both of you for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, we talk about barns.